Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Face the Nation with Margaret Brennan ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you can have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
This episode is brought in part to you by Audible, your go-to destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Whether you're looking for a hair-raising experience to enjoy while you're on the move or eager to dive into sinister and shocking tales, Audible has an exclusive collection of thrillers from best-selling authors that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Like James Patterson's first audio-only thriller, The Coldest Case. Experience stories like never before, where every chilling detail is brought to life by captivating sound design. Plus, as an Audible member, choose one title a month to make yours forever. And now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Just visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
Good morning. I'm Margaret Brennan in Washington. It has been just over 4 weeks since the terrorist group Hamas staged its brutal attack on Israel that killed 1,400. Since then, Israel's response has been powerful and deadly. The conflict has drawn outrage around the world, and the calls for anything from an immediate ceasefire to a humanitarian pause, which is what the U.S. is calling for, have become louder. But as we come on the air, the situation is bleaker than ever. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is traveling in the region and made a surprise visit this morning to Ramallah to meet with the Palestinian Authority president to talk about the future of a Palestinian state. The U.S. is also continuing its push to get Hamas to release hostages, to protect and get aid to civilians in Gaza, and to keep the conflict from expanding, all while standing with Israel against terrorism. We have several reports from the region this morning, as well as interviews with three key voices in the diplomatic efforts. But we begin on the ground in Israel with Charlie Daggett.
The Secretary of State's unannounced visit to the West Bank is the first since the war in Gaza began. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas joined other Arab leaders in calling for an immediate ceasefire. The Secretary of State had come to the region trying to build support for a humanitarian pause in fighting, roundly rejected by Israel, with no let-up in the fight raging inside Gaza. This morning, Hamas accused the Israel Defense Forces of killing more than 40 people in an airstrike at the Al-Maghazi refugee camp. The IDF says it's investigating. But it appears to be the latest in a series of attacks on targets with a heavy civilian presence. From the multiple explosions at the Jabalia and Baraj refugee camps, to more recent strikes on a convoy of ambulances outside the Al-Shifa hospital, which Israel says targeted a Hamas terror cell. And schools turned UN shelters that ultimately provided no safety at all. The dead placed together in delivery trucks acting as makeshift morgues. Families unable to let go of loved ones. Their lives and homes torn apart day after day in 4 weeks of heavy bombardment. The Israeli government insists troops are waging war in accordance with international law to avoid harm to non-combatants. Hamas health officials say the death toll has topped 9,400 people. As its forces encircle Gaza City, the IDF released new video showing troops pushing through the ruins of densely packed urban neighborhoods, from gun battles on the streets of Gaza to IDF units firing from beaches on the western strip of the territory. This said to show forces blowing up tunnels while bulldozers clear routes for more incoming soldiers. With Hamas militants releasing their own footage said to show street-to-street fighting, Israel's defense minister has already warned this phase of the ground operation could take months. In an effort to avoid more civilian deaths, the Israeli military says it opened up the highway leading from north to south Gaza for a window of 4 hours today, dropping leaflets from aircraft, again urging remaining residents to leave for their own safety.
That's our Charlie Daggett in Tel Aviv. We turn now to the occupied West Bank and Deborah Pata's report on reaction there from Secretary Blinken's visit.
Palestinian outrage over the soaring death toll in Gaza is mounting. And here in Ramallah on the West Bank, that anger is directed not only against Israel, but against the United States, which is accused of giving Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu complete carte blanche in his war. And this crowd here today is chanting, Blinken, you have blood on your hands. The visit by the U.S. Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, clearly not welcome in Ramallah.
We turn now to Gaza and CBS News producer Marwan Al-Ghul. We caution that some of the images are quite disturbing. The number of casualties cited are from Hamas-backed Gaza Health Ministry.
Today, at the end day of the month of the war, the life becomes more and more miserable as Israel keep bombing Gaza around the hour, which caused more than 11,000 deaths and more than 24,000 injuries. Half of them or more are children and women. And don't forget that more than 1,500 killed are missed under destruction till now. Hospitals almost collapse. The healthy system in Gaza can't apply its service to the patients, to the deaths and injuries. That's matter of life. It's collapsed. People don't know where to go. I can tell that more than 1 million of the Palestinians in Gaza, I mean half of the population, are displaced with no electricity, lack of food, lack of water, and a lot of destructions everywhere. Today morning, I was driving in Rafah City and I saw thousands line and stand on lines waiting for bread. A woman told me that she had been standing for 6 hours to get some bread, might not be enough for her family.
We go now to White House Principal Deputy National Security Advisor John Finer. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Margaret.
So the U.S. has been trying to get roughly 400 U.S. citizens out of Gaza. I understand some have made it out. Are all of the Americans out, and were there any casualties?
Margaret, we believe that there are still a number of Americans inside Gaza, but that over the last several days, through pretty intensive negotiations with all sides relevant to this conflict, we have been able to get out more than 300 Americans, lawful permanent residents, and their family members. This is obviously a major priority and one that we are going to continue to work at until every American who wants to leave is able to do so.
And where do we stand with the negotiations to get hostages freed by Hamas?
Those negotiations are going on quietly behind the scenes. They have taken longer than any of us would like, but we continue to believe that there is the possibility of getting a significant number of these hostages released. And you've heard both President Biden and the Prime Minister of Israel say that there could be a pause in the fighting to enable that, the way there was when two American hostages were released very early in the conflict. And we're going to continue to work on that as well.
Has the Israeli government agreed to pause for a hostage release?
You heard the Prime Minister of Israel say yesterday that the context in which they would consider a pause would be related to a hostage agreement. We don't obviously have yet a hostage agreement, but again, we are working very hard to get one. And if that were to take place, just being able to move hostages around the battlefield in a way that is safe, get them to a gate leading outside of Gaza would take time, and we would want to only be able to do that safely. So we believe a pause would be appropriate in that context.
Understood. Secretary Blinken has said that what Hamas is doing with using human shields is monstrous. But he also said that he shared with the Israeli government steps they could and should take to minimize harm to civilians. That is the closest I've heard a U.S. official come to saying the administration isn't 100% comfortable with what the Israeli military is doing.
Margaret, I think we've said versions of what you heard from Secretary Blinken a number of times, including from the president. Look, we've been quite clear that the way that Hamas conducts this fight, launching an appalling attack on Israel and then retreating into the Gaza Strip and essentially concealing themselves among a densely populated civilian population is unconscionable. At the same time, while that raises the burden on the Israeli military to conduct this fight and go after Hamas, it does not diminish their obligation to do so in a way that distinguishes between civilians and fighters. And we have had many direct conversations with the government of Israel on that topic, and we'll continue to do that.
Right. But could and should suggest they're not currently. The U.S. provides more than $3 billion a year in military aid to Israel. Does the U.S. need to set conditions on how that U.S. paid for weaponry is used?
We build law of armed conflict assurances anytime we transfer security assistance to any country, including Israel. And when we see circumstances, events that concern us, we raise those very directly with the government of Israel. And again, we will continue to do that as this conflict transpires.
But John, you know that your fellow Democrats, I mean, Senator Chris Murphy said he urges Israel to reconsider its approach and shift to a more deliberate and proportionate counterterrorism campaign. Arab foreign ministers said yesterday, how can we justify that killing 9,000 people is self-defense? How close are we to this stopping?
So what I would say is Israel continues to face an enormous threat from Hamas. Obviously, we've seen that threat manifest itself. And not only does that threat continue to exist, but you continue to see Hamas say that if given the opportunity, they would conduct a version of what they did on October 7th again. So the threat has not been eliminated. At the same time, as you say, the devastating toll that this has taken on civilians is one that deeply concerns us, one that we raise in a very direct way, both publicly, as Secretary Blinken has done, as others have done, and privately and directly with the government of Israel. There are certain responsibilities that any army has in the context of waging a military operation like this, and they're widely known. They are related to international humanitarian law, and we expect them to be followed.
John, Secretary Blinken was in Ramallah in the West Bank, as you know, today, meeting with Mahmoud Abbas. And he was reportedly talking about a future for the Palestinian Authority and some kind of role in Gaza. How close are we to the end of the war if we're talking about a future government here? And is the Palestinian Authority really up to the task?
So I don't want to speculate about how close we are or are not to the end of the war. But what I will say, and President Biden has been very clear about this, is that whenever this conflict is over, we cannot go back to the way things were before October 7th, either in Gaza or in the West Bank. We've obviously been very concerned during this conflict, but also well before it, about the rise in violent incidents in the West Bank. President Biden has spoken to the role of extremist settlers in that context. That behavior has continued. We've expressed that concern directly to the government of Israel, and we give a lot of credit, frankly, to the Palestinian Authority for the work that it has done to prevent the West Bank from spiraling into greater instability, even in the context of what's happening in Gaza. And in the aftermath of this, the president has said we need to get back to the urgent work of working towards a two-state solution that includes both Gaza and the West Bank.
But I just want to make sure I'm understanding you there. There are some ultra-nationalists within the Israeli government who have been very clear their positions, one of them saying he was going to cut some funding to the Palestinian Authority because he didn't think their reaction was strong enough to October the 7th. Another one was also handing out weapons to settlers in recent days. Have you convinced the Netanyahu government to stop that?
you've heard the president speak to, again, serious concerns about the behavior of extremist settlers, violence that has been perpetrated by them in the West Bank that could lead things to spiral out of control. So we obviously don't accept that. We raise those concerns very directly and have done so. We believe now is not the time to reduce support to the Palestinian Authority, given that they are working, in many cases, alongside Israeli security forces to try to keep a lid on things in the West Bank. And we believe that they should both continue to do so and be supported in that endeavor.
John Finer, thank you for your time today.
Thanks again, Margaret.
And Face the Nation will be back in 1 minute with Israeli Ambassador to the United States, Michael Herzog. Stay with us.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
We turn now to the Israeli ambassador to the U.S., Michael Herzog. Ambassador, good to have you here in person.
Thank you.
It's hard to believe it's been a month since we last spoke in the wake of the horrific attack on your country. I want to tap into some of your experience here, because before you were a diplomat, you were in the military. The White House said on Friday, in the coming week, the Israeli military will have more of a tactical focus on the ground campaign to clear out specific areas. Are we moving into a new phase of this war?
So let me explain what we're up against. Gaza is probably the biggest terror complex in the world. You have tens of thousands of armed terrorists, tens of thousands of rockets. We estimate over 500 kilometers of tunnels, terror tunnels with rockets, all their leadership, command and control structure. This is what we're up against, and we have to uproot it, because if we do not, they will strike again and again, and they're saying it publicly. This is a very complicated military operation in a densely populated area, and we're trying to move the population away from that war zone. Mm-hmm. We are moving very slowly, very deliberately, but our operation, we believe, is effective and will continue.
There are still 400,000 people in the north of Gaza, according to the U.S., the area you say you're trying to clear out. But your military has encircled Gaza City. It has killed a lot of leaders of Hamas and praise that as success. So at what point do you declare success, and at what point do you stop this aerial campaign and move into more strategic tactics?
First of all, most of our campaign right now is carried out by ground forces. It's not an air campaign. That was the first phase. Now, I'm not going to put a time frame on this war. We did not start this war. We did not want this war. But we cannot stop before we dismantle this terror machine, or else, as I said, it'll strike again and again. And we have to make sure that when this ends, they are unable to strike again the way they did on October 7th. I think everybody in Israel is united around this goal.
Your prime minister said no ceasefire without the return of hostages. How close are we in those negotiations to get hostages freed?
We are making every effort to get hostages released. And when people talk about a pause in the fighting, we are all for a pause that would allow for the release of hostages. Unfortunately, I'll explain the humanitarian issue, but unfortunately, it is not our impression that Hamas is serious about releasing them. They are playing for time. They're trying to stop our pressure and rearm and regroup themselves. When we see that they are serious about it, then we are all in. Nobody has to urge us. Most of the kidnaps are Israelis, mm-hmm. and our government is responsible to the families. So nobody has to urge us on this.
But the White House has said it was a test case and a successful one to have those two Americans and then those two Israelis released. Why do you think hostage talks are not successful now?
Because Hamas is playing for time, because Hamas is trying to stop our military efforts. And I think the more pressure we put on them, the more chances there are that they may agree to release hostages.
So according to the U.S., there's 400,000 people stuck in north of Gaza. There are thousands of Palestinian civilian casualties. This is according to the White House National Security Advisor. 70 or more U.N. workers, 30 or more journalists who have been killed. Will your military change tactics as the U.S. has asked?
We are making every effort to distinguish between terrorists and civilian population. We called on civilian population to move to the south out of harm's way. And Hamas is doing everything they can to keep them in harm's way. Most of the population moved to the south. And as we speak, and we are pressing Hamas in the north, we are calling people to move out of harm's way. Mm-hmm. I would be very careful about judging those numbers, because neither you nor I know how many of them are armed terrorists and how many of them are civilians. I don't know, and you don't know. Let me tell you more than that. On October 7th, Hamas attacked us with 3,000 armed terrorists. Mm-hmm. We're still collecting the bodies. We have 1,000 bodies of armed terrorists on our coast. Do they count them in their numbers or no? I don't know, and you don't know. So let's be very careful about that, because I don't know how many of them are terrorists and how many. Our military says that he killed numerous terrorists in armed clashes. So let's be very careful about that.
Okay. Well, you just heard one of the U.S. National Security Advisors raising concerns here. In terms of national security interest, there is that question of unintended consequences, right? And that if you, we know from polling that there are a lot of people in Gaza who didn't support Hamas. But now, with this campaign, this brutal, with these number of casualties, there is the risk of radicalization of that population. How concerned are you about that?
We are in every war. There are unintended consequences and there's collateral damage. That's tragic. Every human life is tragic, Palestinian or Israeli, doesn't matter. We act according to international law. We make every distinction that we can make between civilians and terrorists.
But is there an end point?
Now, we called the population to move to the south to keep them out of harm's way. Before we did airstrikes, we called specific families, buildings, asked them to leave. And Hamas is deliberately keeping them. And in part of our clashes in Gaza, they sent like 100 civilians to face our forces. That's the way they operate. This is tragic. This is tragic. But we cannot allow Hamas immunity just because they hide behind civilians. We want to separate between the two and strike the terrorists.
Ambassador, there's a lot more to talk to you about. Unfortunately, I have to leave it there for today. But I hope that we will have you back to continue covering this.
Thank you very much.
The war in the Middle East has fueled anger and outrage in the U.S. Our Mark Strassman reports.
Furies march. Pro-Palestinians, tens of thousands of them, rallying this weekend in Washington.
Palestine won't be free!
Sentiment simmering here, but seething elsewhere. Venom and menace on the prowl, elbowing aside empathy and grace. From in-person bullying to online barbarity. From the first Hamas gunshot on October 7th, the internet became a welter of hatreds, scuttering across mainstream and extremist platforms. In London, Hannah Rose with ISD, the Institute for Strategic Dialogue, monitors online hate speech.
It's still far higher than at regular levels.
And is that true of all hate speech, Muslims, Jews as targets?
It's true of anti-Semitism and anti-Muslim hatred.
In the 3 days after the initial Hamas attack, ISD reports anti-Semitic comments on conflict-related YouTube videos increased by almost 5,000%. Anti-Muslim keywords spiked more than 400%.
What we know about online anti-Semitism and anti-Muslim hatred is that it never stays online.
A Palestinian-American boy of six stabbed to death near Chicago. His attacker reportedly yelled, "You Muslims must die." In New York, this suspect allegedly punched a woman in the face. He told her, "Because you are Jewish." America's Jewish community is understandably skittish. Less than 3% of the country's population, they're the targets of roughly 60% of all religious hate crimes. And that was before the October 7th Hamas attacks.
This is a threat that is reaching, in some ways, sort of historic levels.
FBI Director Christopher Wray testified this week, the threat is real.
This is not a time for panic, but it is a time for vigilance.
Everyday Americans, a half world away from Gaza, but caught in the crossfire, including, horrifically, a six-year-old boy.
Mark Strassman reporting. We'll be right back. Today kicks off a big week in politics. Anthony Salvanto will be along in our second half hour with a new national poll. And then it's Tuesday, Election Day 2023, and CBS News streaming will have live election night coverage starting at 8, anchored by Nora O'Donnell and featuring the rest of our CBS News political reporting team. We'll be right back with the Palestinian perspective to this conflict.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Welcome to Fail Better, David Duchovny's new podcast with Lemonada Media. On Fail Better, David, who has experienced both low and high-profile failures throughout his life, explores the vast world of failure, how it holds us back, propels us forward, and ultimately shapes our lives. Each week, he'll chat with guests like Ben Stiller, Bette Midler, and more about how our perceived failures have actually been our biggest catalysts for growth, revelation, and even healing. Through these conversations, he hopes listeners can learn how to embrace the opportunity of failure and fail better together. Fail Better is out now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Face the Nation. Hossam Zamlat is the Palestinian Authority ambassador to the United Kingdom. He joins us from London this morning. Ambassador, thank you for joining us. You were most recently also the representative of the Palestinian Authority here in the United States. Secretary Blinken was in Ramallah today. There were no public statements made. Was this a tense meeting with your president?
Yes, because there are differences. Our president demanded an immediate ceasefire to the atrocious, murderous assault by Israel on our civilians, on our people. This is not a war against Hamas. It's clear since it started, it's a war against our people, not only in Gaza, by the way, but also in the West Bank. 10,000 innocent civilians, almost half of them are children. And therefore, this is the key point now, not only because we want to stop the atrocities, the carnage, the deliberate killing of our people, but also we don't want this to spread over. Every minute we wait, there is a risk of spreading over. And thirdly, we need to see the U.S. playing the role of an honest mediator, not adopting the Israeli narrative and the Israeli line, given how hysteric and, with the genocidal rhetoric coming out of Tel Aviv right now, we needed a grown-up in the room, and that is the U.S. Unfortunately, we haven't heard that, and that's why we did not come up with a joint statement. We had some good ideas from the Secretary of State Blinken about the future. We had his commitment to a political resolution that will bring about an end to Israel's occupation, a comprehensive one that includes the West Bank and Gaza, with East Jerusalem as the capital of the state of Palestine. And we agree with all of that, but there will be a time to discuss that. Now is the time to stop the barrels of the gun, to stop the murder of our civilians.
Well, you're talking about...
And this whole talk, Margaret, about poses, humanitarian poses, is simply irresponsible, poses of crimes against humanity. So we're going to pose for 6 hours killing our children, and then we resume killing the children? I mean, this doesn't stand even international law. So, there are disagreements, and we seek more.
Let me interrupt you here and say, you know, the Deputy National Security Advisor to the President gave the Palestinian Authority credit for maintaining stability in the West Bank today. Israeli forces say they detained 1,200 people since October 7th, 740 of them associated with Hamas in the West Bank. So how stable is the West Bank and the Palestinian Authority right now?
It is not stable, and that's not an accurate description of the situation in the West Bank. Our people in the West Bank all over are subjected to attacks by the settler militias that your White House and Secretary of State spoke about. Mm-hmm. It's very volatile and dangerous. Many, many Palestinians over the last 3 weeks, you're talking about more than 134, the last number I got, killed by illegal Israeli militias and the Israeli army. Yes. You're talking about provocations in Jerusalem, and you know how volatile the situation in Jerusalem, and you're talking about an assault against our people everywhere. So this isn't about West Bank and Gaza. The West Bank and Gaza are subjected to the very same exercise. Now,
understood, but I'm asking about your government, because there is a serious conversation being had by American diplomats about the Palestinian Authority taking on a role of governing in Gaza as well. So talk to me about that, because we just heard, you know, that you have a financial problem right now, in part because the Israeli government is withholding some of the tax revenues and claiming they're doing it because Palestinian Authority hasn't condemned Hamas adequately and those October 7th attacks. So do you want to clear the air and clearly condemn the attack in Hamas today?
No, I want to clear the record. First of all, the Palestinian Authority is not what represents the Palestinian people. It's the PLO. It's the Palestine Liberation Organization. I represented the PLO in Washington. Now I represent the PLO in London. The PA does not have external arms. The sole legitimate representative of the Palestinian people is the PLO. Number two, let me clarify another matter. It's the state of Palestine that will take over and protect its people in the West Bank, in Jerusalem, and in Gaza once the Palestinian occupied territory is liberated. Number three, it is the opportunity for the U.S. to be the peacemaker.
I'm sure
number
you're one, concerned to de-designate, about that tax revenue,
de-designate.
Though.
Let me
de-designate
the PLO. De-designate the PLO from the terrorist list in the U.S. Congress. Your Secretary of State just shake the hand of the head of the President of the PLO after 30 years of signing the Oslo Accords, after 30 years of committing to international law and negotiations. The U.S. should do that. The U.S. should recognize the state of Palestine and allow us to be a full member in the UN. And the U.S. must immediately stop vetoing our attempts at accountability
in
the ICC.
I'm just asking about this one specific issue on October 7th and the tax revenue.
Not the kids. No, it's the result of us not really focusing on the root cause. This is the moment of the U.S.
I understand
to play
there
the
are deep root causes, but on that specific condemnation, it would just be a very quick answer.
Allow me, Margaret, because I watched your interview with the Israeli ambassador, and he said two things very important. He said, those are unintended consequences, the 10,000 innocent people, the almost 5,000 children. I want to also clear the record here. This is deliberate, and this has been the Israeli military doctrine since its establishment, hitting the civilians so they put pressure on the fighters. From the time of the Nakba 1948 and pushing out, ethnically cleansing two-thirds of the nation, to Beirut and Sabra and Shatila, to Gaza and everywhere, this is a military doctrine.
Okay.
Number two, Israel commits to international law. If they commit to international law, this is not a war. A war does not happen between an occupied and an occupier.
Yeah.
This is an oppressed repression of our people. Wars only happen between two sovereign states.
Okay.
So
well,
this
Ambassador,
is a moment when you empower the state of Palestine that will be able to protect its people, Margaret.
We have to leave the conversation there, but it's very clear that it's really the United States talking about a peace settlement, two-state solutions, and you did not clearly condemn that. So, Ambassador, thank you for sharing the Palestinian point of view. We have to leave it there. Thank you. On Friday, we spoke with the heads of the Four-Country Caucus, a group of veterans in the House led by Colorado Democrat Jason Crow and Texas Republican Tony Gonzalez. We began by asking them about their bipartisan efforts.
What this caucus is all about is respecting each other and being able to have those debates where we can agree on some basic facts. We don't call each other evil. We don't call each other names. We're not maligning each other personally. We're actually having policy debates and figuring out how we move our country forward.
Why do you think, Congressman Gonzalez, that being veterans somehow changes the way you're able to speak to each other about these things?
And it's as simple as service. And folks that have worn the cloth, regardless of service, they love this country. And we work together to solve real problems. The Afghan special interest visas. I mean, these are very important issues. A lot of us spend a lot of time. I spent 5 years in Afghanistan. We don't want to lose sight of our allies, and we don't want to leave those people behind. We've pushed hard with this caucus to give Ukraine everything they need to win this war, to include F-16s. We were very early. We were the first bipartisan caucus to push the administration for F-16s. And now you're seeing them start to come around.
You have both, I should say, at the get-go, been outspoken in your belief that Israel's a right to defend itself in the wake of those horrific terror attacks that were carried out October 7th. You, Congressman Crow, have said just this week, Israel's military confirmed it was an Israeli attack that bombed that Palestinian refugee camp in Gaza. You said, this should not have happened. I've fought wars in crowded cities. When civilians were present, it changed our plans. Arguably, this is potentially a war crime. Why did you think it was important for you to say this?
Because I stand with Israel and its right to defend itself. And I believe very firmly that Hamas must be destroyed. It cannot be allowed to exist as a terrorist organization and pose threats to the Palestinians and to the Israelis. I fought three times in Iraq and Afghanistan. This nation spent 20 years at war, spent over $3 trillion to destroy al-Qaeda, to destroy ISIS, and yet those organizations still exist. So the lesson drawn from that is that you cannot destroy a terrorist ideology with military means alone. You have to have politics, you have to have diplomacy, you have to have humanitarian aid, because you can kill a terrorist, but if you destroy or kill innocent civilians, you create more terrorists in the process. Mm-hmm. So that is why I am adamant that to support Israel, to do this the right way, we have to put front and center the protection of civilians. And every time the United States makes a mistake or strays from our path, I call it out, because the path to getting better and improving is being honest.
But this is often framed as either for or against terrorists. You're yeah. saying, no, you can prosecute a war on terrorism without causing mass civilian casualties.
Well, I spent years in my earlier career fighting terrorists, literally fighting terrorists, and seeing some of my friends give everything during that process. I am a very ardent national security Democrat. I know that there is no military solution to these issues alone. And because I want success, because I want us to do better and to learn from our mistakes, we have to be honest when we do make those mistakes and when our partners make those mistakes.
Do you agree with that, Congressman Gonzalez?
I think war is ugly. And I think in war, there's a lot of nasty things that happen. I think it's important. What you saw this week in the House is the House passed aid to Israel in a bipartisan manner. And many, many people on the other side of the aisle didn't agree with the structure of it. But yeah. you saw a dozen Democrats unconditionally support Israel. I unconditionally support Israel. Whatever comes over our way, I think we have to unconditionally stand with our allies.
But unconditionally is different from what Congressman Crow is saying, which was you can prosecute a war on terrorism without causing mass civilian casualties. Do you agree with that?
I would argue that Israel is not trying to cause civilian casualties.
But they have the fact
in
of
every
that
war. In every war, there's casualties.
You think it's unavoidable?
I think it's unavoidable with what is happening. But I also believe Israel is doing everything it can to make this military targets and not punish a population. But how do you eradicate a terrorist organization that is embedded in every aspect of a civilization. It's a very difficult problem set to have. But think back to the 1,400 Israelis that were slaughtered. I mean, Israel didn't start this war. I'm of the mindset, you know, a ceasefire needs to occur when Hamas is eliminated.
Right. But you were drawing a distinction between Hamas and thousands of civilians. And that's the pushback on your argument, is that there needs to be a brighter line.
There needs to be a distinct, when does this war end? How does this conflict end? In my eyes, the conflict ends when Hamas is eliminated. And also, I think back to, these threats are not just abroad, they're here in the United States.
There has been a rise in anti-Semitism the administration has talked about. We've talked about, the FBI has talked about. In fact, the FBI director said Jews make up 2.4% of the public, but account for 60% of the religious-based hate crimes. That was before October 7th. This has been a problem in the United States of America. Let me ask you about rhetoric, though. Do you oppose Donald Trump's repeated calls for a ban on Muslims? He just recently brought that up again.
I don't pay attention to what the previous president is kind of.
But
I don't pay attention. I mean, ban on Muslims, folks coming over here from these different countries. I'm of the mindset of this.
Because it would contradict what you were talking about with the
I'm of the mindset of this.
Act.
People that can come over here legally, people that are coming over here to do, you know, to visit our schools and do these different things, perfectly fine. I don't care where you come from, what religion you are. But if you are actively going against the United States, if you're actively encouraging, inciting a riot and terrorism, your visa should be immediately revoked and you should be deported.
Sure.
You can do both. It doesn't have to be a universal ban on everyone. It also shouldn't be a no laws are enforced. This is where the administration is getting it wrong.
Sure.
They're not enforcing anything.
Sure. But just on the theme of civility, I think preciseness in language and not using ethnic groups or religious groups, would you advise that anyone in office not call for bans of religious groups or ethnic groups?
I don't.
Or deportations? I know you pay a lot of attention to immigration issues.
Sure. I don't look at the race, religion, creed. I look at the action. And I think if we focus on the action in which these individuals are doing, and we focus on that, and then we hold them accountable. Once again, the administration is not deporting anyone that is actively opening, that is actively inciting this terrorism. This is where the words, you know, when the president gets up there and says, I stand with Israel, your words have to equal your actions.
And I'll just say, providing material support to a foreign terrorist organization is against the law.
Yes.
There are numerous investigations along those lines. There have been numerous prosecutions, and I have no reason to believe this administration does not enforce those laws and to take that very seriously. They do. I know they do. And they should continue to. I'm extremely concerned about the surge of anti-Semitism. It is unacceptable. I condemn Hamas, and I condemn those who support or provide a permission structure for Hamas. And I'm very disturbed about incidents on campuses and incidents around the country where we see young people doing that. Obviously, there's freedom of speech, but there's a point at which freedom of speech becomes a violation of law if you are providing material support.
And the full interview can be seen on our website and on our YouTube channel. Check it out and stay with us.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
And we're back with Ukraine's ambassador to the United States, Oksana Markarova. Good morning and good to have you back here.
Good morning. Good to be back.
Your president has said that the war in the Middle East is diverting some attention from the war that's happening in Ukraine. And he said that's part of Russia's goals. So I want to hear from you. Where you think the conflict is, because I know that Ukraine has said it is running very short of U.S.-provided aid.
Well, it's the war still continues the way it was going. You know, the front line is 800 kilometers. It's 620th day. And the battle continues on all of this 800 miles, actually, not kilometers, miles. Mm-hmm. It's longer than from here to Chicago. So we do need ammunition. We do need air defense. We need all of the capabilities that we have been receiving and we were discussing. And of course, you know, right now all the eyes are on U.S. Congress because we need the continuation of that. We already ran out of some of the programs. We completely utilized them. And yes, we have, thanks to the planning and Congress and administration, some remaining money that we are using. But the time is of the essence. Mm-hmm. And of course, Russia is not only trying. We see all these visits of Hamas and Iran to Russia, and we see how Iran and North Korea helping Russia to fight, but also Russia helping a lot of them and helping Hamas openly. So, you know, we just have to understand that this war on terror have to be won everywhere, mm-hmm. and that we cannot afford to lose focus in one place or another. That's why in order to be able to stop not only Russia, but other terroristic regimes, we also have to win in Ukraine.
You're talking about the fact that Hamas leaders recently visited Russia and that Iran is providing drones for Russia to use against your people in Ukraine. The new Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, has changed his positions publicly on Ukraine. He did recently say he doesn't want Vladimir Putin to win and that he would bundle any Ukraine aid with U.S. border aid. Has he agreed to meet with you? Can you persuade him to move quickly?
Well, I would be happy to meet, of course, whenever there will be time and opportunity. But I'm very glad to hear the speaker said that we cannot allow Putin to win. I think all of us, Ukrainians, but also Americans, on a very strong bipartisan basis, understand that it's important for all of us. We cannot let aggressive, terroristic, non-democratic country to win, which just started a war of choice with no provocation. This is a violation of international law, but it's also a violation of principles on which America is built, the values of Americans, but also what we are trying to build our country on. So we have to win, and America has to win in this one.
Your president was on another network this morning and said that he still doesn't have any reason to believe Russia wants to negotiate a peaceful end to this conflict. But there are a lot of reports that there's pressure on your government to agree to some kind of way to negotiate an end to the fighting. Is there any movement?
Just the reports. Russia never intended to negotiate. Their intent is to destroy us. And we see it on the battlefield, and we see it in all the, if you can call them, diplomatic interactions of their ambassadors. Mm-hmm. But no, you know, their intent is very clear. They are bombing civilians. Just today, they again bombed Odessa. They're bombing our country everywhere. They're preparing, of course, to bomb us even more during winter. And they are trying everything possible on the long front line to achieve some kind of military goal. So that's not how people who want to actually negotiate peace act. People who want to negotiate peace first stop their aggressive war, get out from our country, and then negotiate. So, no, I don't think we should, let's not get fooled by any of the reports, whether they are on anonymous sources or even some Russian sources.
Your president has also talked about the need for more air defense because Russia has strengthened its abilities. He said the F-16s the U.S. promised, they won't arrive for a while, that Ukraine would like to borrow planes. How would that work? Is there some kind of immediate way to address this need?
Well, there are a number, like we are open for any ideas to cooperate. So we're very grateful to American people for all the equipment that we are getting on these programs, you know, with your funding from your own stocks. And we really, again, count on Congress to continue that. We are ready to rent or lease or use any other equipment, including the American equipment. It's not only from the U.S. Mm-hmm. We are ready to co-produce together. It's one of the very important outcomes of the President Zelensky visit to the U.S., and we're working in that direction with American companies. So, you know, we understand that we need much more to win now, but we also need to build our future force, because even after we win, Russia is not going to disappear somewhere, and they will continue to be a threat, not only to us, but to European Union, to the US, to everyone, to transatlantic community.
Ambassador, thank you for your time. Today marks exactly 1 year from the 2024 presidential election and what could end up being a rematch between Joe Biden and Donald Trump. Our new CBS News poll shows Biden continues to trail Donald Trump in that possible head-to-head. He is now down 3 points. For more on why, we go to Anthony Salvanto. Good morning to you, Anthony.
Good morning, Margaret. To understand those numbers, we wanted to look at views about both today and the future. So first, the number of Americans who think that things are going badly in the country today has hit its high for the year. So you might expect any incumbent to be down as Biden is. But then look at these positive views of what people think will happen for them financially if Donald Trump wins. Way more voters think they'd be better off. And Biden, for his part, hasn't fully convinced as many Democrats that he'd help them as the middle class still reels from inflation. Then let's look overseas. There's more voters, we find, who think that it's Trump that would keep the U.S. out of a war if he wins. And that's driven by a lot of Republican unity on that idea. Let's look at Israel in particular. Americans sympathize with the Israeli people. Most Democrats think that Biden would show the right amount of support, but Democrats are more divided over military aid to Israel specifically. Margaret?
Anthony, thank you. And that's going to be it for us today. Thank you for watching. Until next week. For Face the Nation, I'm Margaret Brennan. Today's guests were Deputy White House National Security Advisor John Feiner, Israeli Ambassador to the U.S. Michael Herzog, the Palestinian Authority Ambassador to the United Kingdom Dr. Hossam Zumlot, Colorado Democratic Congressman Jason Crow, Texas Republican Congressman Tony Gonzalez, and the Ukrainian Ambassador to the United States Oksana Markarova. The executive producer of Face the Nation is Mary Hager. This broadcast was directed by Shelley Schwartz. Face the Nation originates in CBS News in Washington. For more Face the Nation, we're online at facethenation.com, and you can follow Face the Nation and CBS Radio News on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Face the Nation is also rebroadcast on our CBS News streaming network on Sundays at 1:30, 4, 10 p.m. Eastern, and again at 4 a.m. the next morning. And it's available through our apps, CBS News and Paramount Plus.
If you like Face the Nation with Margaret Brennan, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Get one of the most successful broadcasts in television history on your schedule with the 60 Minutes podcast. Hard-hitting investigative reports, news, and culture maker interviews and in-depth profiles are waiting for you in every episode. Listen to 60 Minutes ad-free on Wondery Plus.
Survivor's back, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist, a new co-host, the winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares.
Hi!
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.